Welcome back to the Deep Dives, where we crack open big ideas and distill them into insights you can actually use. Today, we're plunging into a fascinating concept that will absolutely fundamentally change how you look at the four walls around you. We're talking about Gaston Bachelard's truly remarkable work, The Poetics of Space.
That's right, and it's really something special.
We've pulled together some rich source material on this book, core excerpts, expert summaries, and our mission for this deep dive is really to extract those essential nuggets of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
By the end, you'll walk away understanding how your living spaces, from the grandest rooms to the tiniest forgotten corners, actively shape your mind, your memories, and, well, even your dreams.
And this isn't just about architecture, as you might think. Not at all. Bachelard invites us to consider the very architecture of our souls.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
The architecture of our souls.
Yeah. He sees our homes not as mere backdrops, but as, like, living entities, partners in our human experience. It's truly fascinating how he bridges the tangible world, bricks and mortar, with the intangible realm of human imagination and memory.
Okay, let's unpack this with the man himself, Gaston Bachelard, because his own journey is as intriguing as his ideas. You might expect a philosopher of space to come from a background in, say, architecture or psychology, right?
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
But Bachelard's path was decidedly different. Get this, he actually started his career as a postman.
A postman, right. It's quite the starting point.
Here's where it really gets interesting, though. He then immersed himself in science, earning a doctorate in the philosophy of science. His early work was all about how scientific knowledge evolved.
Mm-hmm. Very analytical.
But then he took this profound intellectual detour into the subjective world of imagination, dreams, poetry. It's almost like he delivered letters, then analyzed physics, then decided to explore the universe inside us.
And that dual expertise is precisely what makes his perspective so unique and, well, powerful. He brought the analytical rigor of a scientist to the profound sensitivity of a poet. He wasn't just dissecting metaphors. He was investigating the very wellsprings, their origins of poetic images within human consciousness.
Okay.
This background uniquely positioned him to connect the material world, the physical house, with the immaterial world, our inner experience. He even coined a term for it, topophilia, which simply means the love of place.
Topophilia, I love that. It immediately gives a positive spin, doesn't it?
It really does. It focuses on that positive connection.
So at its core, what is Bachelard's central argument in The Poetics of Space? What's the big idea here?
Well, his central argument is that our experience of intimate spaces, especially the house we inhabit, isn't just a setting for our lives. It's a fundamental part of our consciousness, our memory, our imagination.
A fundamental part of us.
Exactly. Think of your childhood home, he argues. It becomes your first universe. A foundational part of your psychological being, almost like a blueprint for how you experience all subsequent spaces.
It's a powerful idea. The house is a first universe.
Yeah.
But how does he specifically argue it becomes a part of our psychological being rather than just, a setting? Is it through memory or something else?
Precisely. And this raises an important question. How do the physical spaces we feel secure in become internalized as psychic spaces that nurture our souls and anchor our identity?
Right.
Bachelard called his method topoanalysis, which is basically a psychological study of the sites of our intimate lives.
Topoanalysis. Okay.
And unlike traditional psychoanalysis, which often looks for symbols of repression or, trauma in spaces, Bachelard championed a phenomenological approach.
Okay. Phenomenological approach sounds a bit academic. Can you break that down for us? What does that really mean in practice?
Absolutely. Think of phenomenology as studying how things feel and appear to us directly in our immediate lived experience.
Okay, the feeling of it.
Yeah, rather than trying to figure out what they objectively mean or what causes them. So instead of dissecting symbols, he focused on felicitous spaces, those positive, cherished places.
Felicitous spaces. Like happy spaces.
Exactly. Happy, positive spaces that genuinely foster well-being, creativity, and a sense of belonging. He wanted to understand the poetic image itself in its very novelty as a sudden flame that lights up in our soul.
So he's saying we should pay attention to those spaces that make us feel good, feel safe, rather than always looking for hidden problems. That's a refreshing shift.
It really is. It's about valuing the positive experience.
Now, Bachelard doesn't just theorize. He takes us on a tour, doesn't he? Not of a real house, but a kind of universal archetypal home.
Yes, he guides us through this sort of imaginary composite house, starting with its overall structure. He sees the house as a vertical being,
Vertical.
with distinct psychic zones. It's a brilliant way to explore the different layers of our subconscious, really.
Like the cellar, for example, which he calls the dark entity. I immediately picture dusty old secrets, maybe even a little bit spooky.
Right. It's linked to the irrational and the unconscious, isn't it? A place where the buried past might reside.
Makes sense.
Exactly. It's where the primal, sometimes irrational aspects of our being might linger. And then at the opposite end, you have the garret or attic.
Up under the roof.
Right, open to the sky. That symbolizes clarity, rationality, conscious thought, even our dreams of the future. So living in a multi-story house, he suggests, is to experience this profound polarity of being,
Wow.
from the darkest depths to the highest aspirations.
That makes so much sense. We often talk about having skeletons in the closet, but Bachelard would say maybe they're in the cellar.
Agrees softly.
Yep.
Could be. And then beyond the grand house, he also highlights the simple hut. What's so profound about such a basic shelter?
Yeah, just a little hut.
The hut is like a primal image of concentrated refuge, a compact world. It brings immediate peace and embodies the very essence of inhabiting that direct, unmediated sense of security and being. It distills the idea of home to its most essential protective form.
Okay. And what's fascinating here is how the house isn't just protecting us, it's actually changing how we feel about the world outside. He talks about confronting the cosmos and cosmic confidence. What does that truly mean?
That's a great point. It means the security of our home allows us to experience the vastness, or even the, let's say, fury of the cosmos, like a winter storm, or the immense night sky without fear. Instead of feeling overwhelmed or threatened, we feel confident within our sanctuary. The house becomes a buffer and a lens,
A lens, okay.
intensifying both our sense of cosmic drama and our feeling of being perfectly sheltered. It truly mediates between our intimate self and the vast outside.
That's a beautiful distinction. It's not just about protection, but about enabling a richer experience of the world because you feel safe.
Decisive.
And he doesn't stop at the big picture. He zooms in on the intimate objects within the home, too, doesn't he? Like drawers, chests, and wardrobes.
Absolutely. These aren't just practical storage units. For him, they're potent metaphors for secrecy, memory, and our hidden interior lives.
Hidden lives.
Yeah, the act of opening a drawer becomes an act of discovery, embodying the proverb, "I am the master of my own secrets." They hold not just physical items, but psychological treasures, hidden stories.
I love that idea of a drawer holding secrets. It makes me think of all the random stuff I've squirreled away over the years. My junk drawer is probably a philosophical gold mine then.
Agrees. Could very well be.
What else does he look at? He looks at the natural world too, right?
Yes, he extends his gaze to nature's dwellings, like nests and shells. The nest is an archetype of security, built from the inside out, representing perfect repose and a unity between the inhabitant and its dwelling. It's like an embrace.
Cozy.
Exactly. The shell, too, is a natural dwelling, but it brings in the theme of withdrawal and protection. It suggests a positive act of self-preservation and regeneration, allowing life to gather its forces before reemerging.
So, like going into your shell.
Right. These are potent images of how we seek spaces that are extensions of our very being.
And what about something as simple as a corner? Most of us just see it as, you know, where two walls meet.
For Bachelard, a corner is so much more. He sees it as a haven of immobility and a chamber of being.
A chamber of being.
Yeah. When you retreat into a corner, perhaps to read or just to think, you're not just hiding, you're grounding yourself. You're finding a partial negation of vastness, allowing your imagination to roam freely while feeling utterly protected.
Okay, that makes sense.
He even quotes a poet saying, "I am the space where I am," suggesting this complete merger of self and place, a profound psychological refuge.
That's a wonderful way to think about those quiet moments. He also explores the paradox of scale, doesn't he? Miniature objects versus intimate immensity.
Yes, it's a brilliant paradox. Miniature objects, like a ship in a bottle or a dollhouse, can contain vast imaginative worlds. They concentrate value and richness
Right, little
and
world.
invite close, loving attention. Conversely, vastness the sea, the night sky doesn't have to be alienating. Through reverie, through daydreaming, we can internalize this immensity, so the world is large, but in us it is deep, expanding our consciousness to feel at one with the cosmos.
Wow.
It's a form of metaphorical daydreaming that profoundly enriches our being.
So a tiny trinket can hold infinite stories, and the infinite universe can feel like it resides inside us. That's a bit of a mind bender.
It really is.
He also looks at the constant negotiation between outside and inside through things like doors and windows thresholds.
Exactly. These elements, doors, windows, thresholds, aren't just functional. They're charged with deep psychological meaning. They are both barriers and openings.
Right, they do both jobs.
The boundary between our inner and outer worlds, he argues, is like a porous membrane, constantly negotiated, always active. This simple binary opposition is absolutely central to human consciousness and our sense of identity.
Okay. And finally, he even gets into the phenomenology of roundness. What's going on there? That sounds abstract.
It might sound abstract, but it's very profound, actually. Bachelard suggests that being is round.
Being is round.
He means that a state of pure, concentrated existence feels complete, self-contained, and without sharp edges, like a perfect sphere or a bubble. Images of a bubble or a nut help us imagine a being that is full and whole.
Uh-huh.
It elevates the discussion to a broader philosophy of being and a state of peaceful reverie. It's that feeling of wholeness, of being utterly contained and at peace.
So he's saying when you're truly at home in yourself or in a space, you feel round. I like that.
Kind of, yeah. It's about that self-contained fullness.
Now, how did Bachelard uncover all these deep connections? He wasn't using scientific data or traditional psychological case studies, was he?
No, not in the usual sense. His primary material was the work of poets and writers, people like Rainer Maria Rilke, Charles Baudelaire, Edgar Allan Poe, Henri Bosco.
So poets.
Yes. He believed poets were the original phenomenologists of the soul, capturing the essence of spatial experience in their raw images.
So he saw poetry as actual evidence of how we experience space. That's really turning the academic world on its head, isn't it?
Precisely. He argued that by analyzing these poetic images, we gain direct access to the universal archetypes of space that reside within our collective human consciousness.
Wow.
For Bachelard, a genuine poetic image is like a minor birth, a new burst of language that reveals fundamental experiences of dwelling, often more effectively and immediately than any scientific experiment or objective description could.
So it's about the truth of lived experience.
Exactly, not just observed data.
Okay, so as we wrap up our tour of Bachelard's fascinating ideas, what are the absolute biggest takeaways from the Poetics of Space that you want our listeners to remember? What should really stick?
Well, one core message, I think, is the primacy of the childhood home.
Right, the first universe.
Yeah, it's not just a building. It's the topography of our intimate life, our first cosmos. We carry this original house within us forever, and all subsequent homes are kind of measured against its psychic blueprint. It provides the template for security and belonging.
Mm.
And this leads directly to his ideas about topoanalysis and felicitous space, that unique way of studying those cherished positive places that shape us.
And I can absolutely relate to that. My childhood bedroom still feels like a template for what a truly safe space means to me.
Mm-hmm. Most people have that feeling.
What else stands out?
Another key theme is the elevation of reverie or daydreaming.
Ah, yes, the importance of daydreaming.
Right. He lifts it from idle distraction to a profound and creative mode of consciousness. Intimate spaces, he argues, are nests for reverie, allowing our soul to be most in touch with itself.
So it's okay to just stare out the window sometimes.
Absolutely. It reminds us that quiet, undirected thought is essential for well-being and creativity. It connects to what he calls the phenomenology of the imagination.
It's a reminder to carve out those moments of stillness in our busy lives.
Yeah.
Definitely needed. And what's the final big idea?
Finally, Bachelard continuously explores the dialectics of space, that interplay between inside versus outside, cellar versus attic, miniature versus immense. He shows that our experience of space is dynamic. It's defined by the tension and interplay between these poles, and that creates a rich and complex psychic life.
Okay.
Understanding these tensions helps us appreciate the richness of our environment and reveals the house as a cosmological tool, as we touched on earlier.
Bachelard's writing is as poetic as the subject he explores. And he has some truly memorable lines, doesn't he? Lines that really stick with you.
Oh, absolutely. One that perfectly captures his central argument, I think, is the house shelters daydreaming. The house protects the dreamer. The house allows one to dream in peace.
Hmm, that's lovely.
It defines the house not by its physical structure, but by its profound psychological function, a sanctuary for imagination and internal life.
That's beautiful. It frames our homes as active partners in our inner worlds. Really changes how you see them.
It does. And another powerful quote is, intimate immensity. This is a philosophical category of daydreaming.
Right, that paradox again.
Yeah. He says, daydreaming, it seems, is an easy activity, But the cases of metaphysical daydreaming, the daydreams that lull us into the cosmos, are an enrichment of our being.
So daydreaming can actually expand us.
Exactly. He's telling us that the vastness of the universe can be experienced intimately, expanding our own consciousness and enriching our sense of self just by letting our minds wander from a place of security.
And that idea of the world being large but deep in us really changes how you think about scale. It's one more quote that sort of sums it all up.
Perhaps the simplest yet most profound is, all really inhabited space bears the essence of the notion of home. This means that home isn't just a deed or an address. It's about any space that carries your psychological investment, your memories, your sense of security and belonging. He even says, inhabited space transcends geometrical space.
So it's about feeling, not just square footage.
Exactly that. It's the inhabiting that matters.
So how can we take these beautiful, profound ideas and apply them to our everyday lives?
How can Bachelord's philosophy actually help you, the listener?
Well, for personal well-being, you can try performing your own topo analysis.
Okay, how would you do that?
Just take a moment to meditate on the spaces of your past, your childhood bedroom, maybe a favorite reading corner, even a secret fort you built. This can reveal powerful sources of security and identity. And it also inspires us to consciously create felicitous spaces in our current homes.
Right, those happy places.
Yeah. That perfect comfy chair, a quiet corner with a window, creating sanctuaries for rest and reverie. I love the idea of actively creating a felicitous space, giving a name to something we might instinctively do anyway. For those listening who might be involved in, say, architecture or interior design, this book must be foundational.
Oh, it absolutely is, or it should be. It argues for designing spaces that cater to emotional needs, not just purely functional ones.
Right.
It challenges sterile minimalism and calls for houses with a soul, you know, with nooks, varied light, spaces that invite introspection, considering that verticality and the transitions between spaces.
So building places that breathe with human experience.
That's a great way to put it.
And on a daily basis, just for anyone, it really sounds like the book offers a complete shift in perspective.
It really does. It makes the ordinary extraordinary. Suddenly, a simple closet door becomes a threshold to secrets. A bird's nest becomes a miracle of instinctual dwelling. A quiet corner becomes almost a sacred space. It teaches a form of mindfulness focused on our environment, encouraging us to appreciate the poetry inherent in the simple, profound act of inhabiting a space. It allows us to truly see our world differently.
It helps you notice more.
Bachelord truly teaches us that our homes and intimate spaces aren't just inert containers for our lives, but active, living participants in the formation of our souls.
That's a big thought.
Yeah. They are the bedrock of our imagination, the psychic anchors we return to for comfort and orientation, really defining who we are.
So as you go about your day, perhaps look around you right now. What cherished spaces are you carrying with you right now in your memory and imagination? And what are those spaces trying to tell you about who you are and maybe who you're becoming?
Great questions to ponder.
We hope this deep dive into the poetics of space has given you a fresh perspective and maybe a richer appreciation for the intimate world around you. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.